This podcast is Entail Enhanced. To see pictures, articles, and links of what's being discussed, download the Entail app.
Hi, I'm Aunchal, YouTuber, Instagrammer, and a real voice for the brown girls, and now an author. Pre-orders for What Would the Aunties Say, the book, are now available on Waterstones, WH Smith, Amazon, and all other major book retailers. Join me and some very special guests where we discuss taboo subjects and really give the aunties something to talk about. In today's episode, I'm joined by a really, really special guest, Dip Stanjal, the phenomenal DJ that so many of you have had the pleasure of having him entertain your events. But he's also known as my Jija. And if you don't know what that means, he's my brother-in-law, but also one of my best friends and someone that I really, really look up to. We're discussing alcohol culture, mainly in the Punjabi community, why there seems to be a problem, and ways of dealing with it. It's a pretty deep and personal episode and one that really, really needed to happen. Just a side note, I refer to my brother-in-law as Jij or Jij, so if you hear that during the episode, that's just what I call him. I really hope that you're able to take something away from this episode today, whether it's for you or a loved one. I really hope it helps. So without further ado, let's get into it. Jij, I'd normally want you on my podcast to talk about so many things you're so knowledgeable on. But today I want to discuss alcohol culture in the South Asian community and particularly in the Punjabi community. Now, I know being a Punjabi male, you've grown up seeing the attitude towards alcohol in our community, but you also have a unique perspective on the topic as well. So would you mind telling us what that is?
Sure. So I suppose to start with, you know, thank you for having me on. And, you know, it's quite nice to be able to, you know, talk about some of the experiences that I've had and, you know, hopefully support anybody through an issue that they might be suffering at the moment with regards to sort of alcohol. But, you know, before I do that, I'd like to just preface a little bit that I'm not qualified as such. I'm not a medical professional here. And anything that I say today is going to be based on my personal experiences. And, you know, I can talk through the way that I overcome some of the challenges that I faced. And, you know, just to preface that a little bit and, you know, do make sure that you are doing everything you can to go down the proper medical routes to absolve any potential issues that you have, especially when it comes to, you know, solid addiction. I would say, you know, seek medical professional help. But just to give you, you know, the lay of the land here. So some time ago, you know, I had some very destructive experiences with alcohol. It became a very prominent thing in my life, and it led to a lot of sort of inner turmoil, as well as turmoil outside of my immediate sphere. So, you know, the family was suffering and, you know, some of my relationships were really tested. What it tended to do to me was sort of escalate and amplify some of the more negative parts of my personality. And, you know, in fact, they amplified them like you wouldn't believe. And it made me unrecognizable and a complete shell of myself for a fairly significant period of time. Now, I wouldn't go as far as saying that I was suffering from the definition of an addiction, but the reality is that it went far enough to really break me. You know, there was a real stranglehold for a long time, and I spent a lot of time paralyzed to it, not being able to focus on, you know, my life in general, my relationships, my work. And, you know, what you find is that, you know, humans have this innate ability to wander through parts of their life struggling, but the struggle is so prolonged that it becomes normal. And that's pretty much where I was for a really, really long time. And without going into, you know, the details of some of the events that sort of occurred during that time period, I'd say it was one of the toughest experiences of my entire life and something that I had to overcome to be here today.
Definitely. I really appreciate you sharing that with me and everyone, because I know it's not easy. You said that you wouldn't go as far to say that it was an addiction. So at what point does someone go from just being a drinker to an alcoholic? Like, who is an alcoholic?
So, I mean, there's a few different schools of thought on how to tackle alcoholism. And I think there's two distinctly different types of drinkers. You have people that are binge drinkers, as I was, who on a relatively regular basis, not necessarily regular, but certainly consistent in with regards to sort of, you know, binge drinking on occasions that are sort of far enough apart to be seen as sort of a habit. So it could be weeks. I mean, it could be months, to be fair. But, you know, I think binge drinking is classified as a style of alcoholism that is quite different from dependency. Dependency would be more along the lines of sort of, you know, drinking every day as soon as you wake up in the morning, and actually physically needing it. I think there's a distinct difference between the two. I personally, and again, I'm not a medical professional, I'm not a psychologist or anything like that, I would say that the dependency part is probably more in line with what I would consider to be an addiction, and definitely something that needs professional help.
Yeah, because to me, like, I think of some of the uncles that I know, you know as well, but people that need a drink before they have their dinner, or they have to drink every single evening. They might not be waking up and drinking first thing in the morning, but they definitely need a few drinks at night, their whiskey or whatever it is, or someone having, you know, glasses of wine, whatever. But it's a everyday thing to me that is someone that is an alcoholic, someone that's addicted and has a problem. But I feel like in our culture, that's so normal to... Yeah, that is something that we see all the time.
I'd say it depends on the gravity of the problems that arise from it.
Okay.
So you'll have people that drink on a daily basis but can put the glass down and say enough is enough. You know, we hear it all the time with regards to people saying, oh, I went through half a bottle of wine last night and, you know, I've done that sort of, you know, every other day this week. I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, if it's a big problem and it's encroaching on your life and testing your relationships and being really destructive, I don't necessarily think it's a problem. I mean, at the end of... No, I don't. I really don't. I just think it's a matter of balance in that regard. You know, alcohol has its... Let's face it, alcohol has its uses, and there's a reason that people drink it, and there's a reason that people turn to it. And I wouldn't go as far as calling them benefits, but it has an effect on people that is desirable in some cases. And if that's something that you feel like you need, and it isn't necessarily a destructive force in your life, it's okay. Again, it's striking that balance, isn't it? I'd say it's akin to, you know, eating junk food. You know, you're not going to get smashed on Big Macs. And I think in terms of alcoholism, there is a sliding scale of dependency and drinking regularly. And everybody's sort of somewhere in between that scale. But I think they're two very different situations. I wouldn't say daily drinking is necessarily an addiction.
So interesting that you think that, because I actually think it is an addiction. But yeah, who knows? It's really, really interesting. But let's back it up for a minute, because growing up, like, my family, alcohol has openly been around us. Like, you know, my parents would have social drinks with their friends on the weekends, and we've seen it all our lives. It's just part of growing up, seeing our parents drink. And, you know, My parents were never shy to sort of let us try it as well, even as kids. If we asked, what's that? What are you drinking? And they just let us try it. And yeah, so that it kind of killed the curiosity. But for you, how do you think that played a role in your relationship with alcohol at all?
I'd say, I mean, my parents both drink, and as did my grandfather, and as do most of my family members. But I don't think that they were of a particular influence on me. I think the bigger influence on me was my peers. And I'd go as far as saying I didn't really drink all that much until I got into my early 20s. So in essence, I mean, as an Indian bloke, I was quite late to the party. I was about 5 years late.
Well, what were you seeing around you? What was it that your peers were doing? Or did you feel pressure almost?
No. And I've always been a fairly self-assured person. At the beginning, there was no pressure whatsoever. The reason I was late to the party was purely out of choice. And I don't recall any experiences of sort of true pressure. But that's just me. I was a very self-assured person. I'd probably say that some of my peers that I saw and observed sort of, you know, drinking themselves stupid were under that pressure. I was fortunate enough to be able to sort of handle myself. Things changed when I felt like I needed to turn to alcohol to affect my own life. So it was very much a choice.
And when things were sort of getting worse, and not to go into any detail, but when you're going through something like this and things are progressively getting worse, almost like a downward spiral, are you aware that there's a problem? Like when you're in it, are you aware of it, or are you in denial about there being an actual problem? And is there ever like a voice in your head that's letting you know, but you're ignoring it? Because obviously, yeah, it would just be really interesting to know what it feels like.
So, you know that voice that tells you you're lazy when you don't work out and you miss that workout day?
Mm-hmm.
It's that voice, but a hell of a lot louder, a hell of a lot deeper, and a lot scarier. And we tend to ignore our own faults. And, you know, we all have those embarrassing things that we know are wrong about us. And we have these conversations with ourselves, and then we push on and do nothing about it. It's that exact same voice. It's the exact same voice that keeps people out of the gym on a daily basis. But it's just a hell of a lot scarier. It is there, and it always was there. And it wasn't just the voice telling me that, oh my God, this drinking is getting out of control. And you need to stop doing this. It was that same voice that was telling me that all the other things in my life were wrong as well. And, you know, you're not where you should be when it comes to work. You're not where you should be when it comes to your relationships. You're not where you should be when it comes to your finances, all that stuff. You know, anything that I was getting wrong in life in general was being amplified. And the alcohol was serving as sort of self-medication to a point. And, you know, I've rationalized this concept in my head where alcohol was the effect of a bunch of different causes, but then slowly over time, the cause and the effect of the stresses in my life were changing places. So then alcohol became the cause rather than the effect.
Okay.
And so the areas of my life that I was experiencing problems in.
Yes.
Basically switched places.
Okay.
And the fact that I was trying to self-medicate to alleviate myself of my other problems,
yeah,
then became the problem.
Right.
And
right.
I didn't know what the hell to do. Because then you're like, okay, everything over there is still broken, but this thing that I was trying to do to self-medicate and alleviate myself of those stresses is now also a problem.
Yes. So it's not like, okay, so you go from I'm not in the right job yet and that being the problem to the problem now being the drinking, but the job still is where it's at and now things are even worse. Is that right?
Well, the job is worse because you can't focus. You
yeah.
can't do it and you can't do it properly.
Yeah. Okay, so I get you. I just had to break it down.
Yeah, no. Everything compounds. And I'd go as far as saying that anybody that you find is self-medicating in this way is probably in a very similar position. I don't know. I've never studied it. I've never studied, you know, this particular outlook on things. But, you know, that's generally what people are doing with alcohol. It is self-medication.
That makes sense. And I think that makes sense in any sort of thing that you turn to. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be alcohol, but it could be food. You know, when people overeat or they get into crazy diets because it's their way of sort of masking or dealing with things, and even drugs in general. Yeah, I guess, yeah, that makes complete and total sense. And all of us do it. Everyone does that.
What's really interesting about it, though, from our community perspective is that the things and the stresses and the things that compounded in my head all sort of came from our pride and shame culture.
Yes.
You need to have this type of career. You need to be married before X date. You need to have this much money. You need to be earning this much money to be a viable husband. You know, all that rubbish that we have to deal with on a daily basis. And these are all things that you've discussed. And I find that, you know, men, although we are often put on a pedestal as being sort of the preferable gender, that's not a good place to be. It sounds like it's a privilege, but it's really, really not. If you have an analytical mind and you have an ounce of pride in yourself and being able to build yourself up to be, you know, a successful person, you don't want to be put on that pedestal. You want to climb up to that pedestal, right? And so the struggle of climbing up to that pedestal is just as prominent for men as it is for females within our community.
Yeah, definitely.
I think in essence, a lot of the pressures, the amount of pressure is very similar, although, you know, it might be dressed up slightly differently. And I think that's what makes alcoholism so prominent within males, especially in the Punjabi community. I think there is this macho ideal that we are often expected to live up to. And some of us live up to that ideal very well as men, yeah. And some of us don't.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree with you. I think it's like a sign of being more of a man or a bigger man if you can drink more, I guess. But for women, they also have, you know, just like, you know, just different, but just as many expectations and pressures. But women aren't supposed to drink. But then they have to turn to doing it secretly and have to face, I think, I could be wrong, possibly bigger consequences if, you know, they are labelled as an alcoholic or someone that's, you know, turning to alcohol. Maybe they'll get labelled as a bad mom, you know, could be divorced for it, disowned, all sorts. And I almost think some of the consequences for women are harder because they have to do it secretly.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that in some cases. I mean, like, you know, every individual case is very different. And I'd say, you know, given what you've just said, the thought has just sort of popped into my head. And anytime I've ever done any sort of research or wanted to, you know, look at the stats or the data that anybody's collected about this, there's a big hole in terms of being able to measure the extent of the problem within our community, whether it comes to whether it's from a male perspective or a female perspective. But just, yes, holistically, there are no figures. There are no studies that warrant any real, you know, reflection on what the actual issue looks like. Because like you said, that secrecy thing, it goes both ways too, right? Because it's not just the shunning of the community that you want. You know, you do this in secret yourself. I can tell you a million times where I was drinking to alleviate myself of some sort of issue and nobody knew. Nobody knew about it. Nobody knew I had been drunk. Nobody knew I was hungover. Nobody knew when or how much I had done the night before. Nobody knew. And that secrecy piece is, you know, it's scary because it doesn't allow you to actually measure the issue. And until you measure the issue, you can't fix the issue.
Yeah, it's so true. Like, I was trying to do research for this podcast myself, and there really isn't enough research out there. There's not a lot, and especially for the South Asian or Punjabi community, whereas we are probably one of the biggest communities that have a problem with alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite shocking. I mean, there is data out there, and there are people doing great work in terms of, you know, surfacing some of these problems. But I really do feel that they need more support. They need more. They need more samples. They need more data.
And, definitely.
And I think the fear of talking about these things is what keeps them from really progressing and making a dent in the problem.
Definitely. But I feel like a lot of cultures glorify and celebrate alcohol in some way. You know, we're not the only community that are big drinkers or really open about being drinkers. Do you think that there are any differences at all between us as a Punjabi community? And if so, what makes it different within the Punjabi culture?
I don't think that there's any part of this that is exclusive to the Punjabi community. Alcohol issues around the world are very prominent, and they're all very, very similar. They're worryingly similar. What I do think, however, is that the again, it's the pride, it's the embarrassment, it's the stigma piece that really amplifies it. Because remember, what you're doing is, from a headspace perspective, when you are hungover, you are suffering withdrawal symptoms, right? From alcohol. And what's actually happening in your head, and everybody says it, they all say, I'm never drinking again. Whether you have a problem with alcohol or not, everybody yeah. says, I'm never ever drinking again.
Yeah, right. Say that every time.
So let's frame that as a little bit of guilt, Because essentially that's what it is. I feel guilty. I shouldn't have done that. I was stupid.
Yeah. And I feel like crap.
Now, amplify that guilt times 10 because you've done it before, because you've done it 10 times, because you've done it 20 times, because you've done it 30 times. You're carrying around this big bag of rocks. You're carrying around all of this guilt and you can't tell anybody because of the stigma that will be attached to it. And in fact, there's so much pride within our community that nobody wants to talk to you about it either, out of fear of embarrassing you. So we live in a community which likes to blame the community, right? So, you know, if you had a room full of 100 Punjabi people, they would all be able to have a long discussion about the community's failings. What I'd like to talk about more is where does the individual responsibility begin to actually helping alleviate these issues? You know, alcohol just being one of them. When are you going to love your family members and friends well enough to actually allow them to surface their honesty? You know, instead of ignoring the forceful uncle through fear of embarrassment, you should be standing up, albeit gently, for those that are clearly being coerced. You know, if you really pay mindful attention to people and you truly listen and observe, you'll see who's struggling sometimes, because some people are very good at hiding it. But sometimes is always better than never.
Definitely. It's so true. It's so true. Because I think, yeah, there's all of these pressures, there's all of these expectations, and the focus is more so on all of those things, being a good person, having the right job, earning the right money, you know, marrying someone in your culture, in the same culture, and all of these external things. But yeah, nobody's actually focusing on actually asking you even how you are and giving a shit when they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was fortunate enough to have family and some friends around me who were happy to listen and sort of support me through it. But I needed to know that they were there and they were able to listen. And I didn't know that for a long, long time.
Yeah. And what effect do you feel like it had on like your loved ones and the people around you?
At which part?
So when you were probably at your worst and everyone is witnessing what's happening, how was it for everyone else around you? How did it affect them?
So without speaking for them, I'd say shock, because it was out of character. And in between episodes, I was pretending to be my normal, optimistic, positive self. I spent a hell of a lot of time pretending, and I practiced smiling for a long, long time. And you know, so it was a shock every time, and it would just decimate my immediate circle. I mean, it was bad. And it got to the point where we were, you know, everybody was worried about what I was gonna do next. You know, what's going to happen the next time Dips decides to get drunk? Is he going to get arrested? Is he going to end up in hospital? Like, what is happening here? And I think the nature of binge drinking actually made it a little bit worse, because people don't understand binge drinking. And, you know, he's not got a problem with alcohol. He doesn't drink every day. That's not the point. The point is that I was spending my days trying to be as normal as possible and then letting all of those, my perceived inadequacies, bubble up. And then, you know, 6 weeks, 4 weeks down the line, all of those things would get too much and, you know, everything would explode and I would have the episode to end all episodes.
Yes. Yeah.
So everybody was... I'd say everybody was on tenterhooks. It made everybody very nervous. It made everybody was scared for my safety more so than anything else. And I think it was a journey for everybody to kind of understand what I was going through also, and understand the problem more, because it started off as, oh my God, you drank too much, you're a twat, to eventually being, what is going on? Like, what's on your mind? Talk to us. Tell us how we can help you. And, you know, the conversation changed over time. And it took a long time to get there. But I think we all learned something through that experience with regards to helping the ones that you love surface their issues and being able to actually break down what somebody's going through to be able to help.
Definitely. Where do you think you'd be now if you hadn't have got the help?
I'd say I'd probably be in a very similar position. I'd be worse off in that nobody would trust me. I'd be worse off in that I probably wouldn't have made any progress in my career. I'd be worse off in that it would affect my relationship with my children. I think I would still be living, breathing, and trying to pretend that everything is fine. And I'd have gotten much better at that. It's a really weird situation to think about, right? Because, I mean, they refer to it as being a functioning or a high functioning alcoholic. And people do this, right? They go through life on autopilot, whereby actually everything on the surface is fine, but you know, deep down they've got these awful issues and feelings, and you know, that self-medication continues in secret. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about the secrecy behind this. The secrecy part is what keeps me away from saying that I'd be in a gutter or I'd be homeless, because I would be doing it in secret. And nobody would know. I mean, nobody outside my inner circle would know. And I know that my inner circle wouldn't talk to anybody outside of our inner circle for fear of embarrassment, for fear of all of the things that we've discussed. So it's a really complex situation.
Yeah, because you want to protect the person that you love.
Yeah, yeah. It's scary to think about. And you know, my heart really goes out to anybody who's, you know, going through something and using alcohol to self-medicate. It's not a good plan. Look, alcohol, like I said at the beginning, it has its uses, right? Because when you drink, you feel great. When you've had those first few, you do actually feel great.
It's like a little come up. It's like a high almost. And then when it's wearing off and you're almost on this come down and the hangover, that's when things really hit you, maybe. I don't know.
It's a great drug for lowering your inhibitions. That's exactly what it does. It makes people more confident. It makes people, or at least think that they're more confident. But, you know, what you really need to do is replace, and from a binge drinking perspective, I'm not talking from dependency again. I'm not qualified to talk about daily dependency. But from a binge drinking perspective, you need to find something to replace the alcohol in terms of bringing your inhibitions down and being a little bit more confident and being confident enough to be honest to yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And Jeej, I know that you tried lots of different things when you were, I don't know what to call it, like when you were going through this, shall we say. I don't know what to call this moment in time that you were in. But yeah, I know that you had all of us and, you know, just sort of telling you to stop, which I think now in hindsight, I think that's not very helpful. We were saying it out of love because, yeah, we care for you and we were worried for you. But telling someone to stop just, I think now, isn't enough. And I know that you were trying to go on your own journey to come out of this thing again. I don't know what to refer to it as. And I know that there was like Alcoholics Anonymous and all these other things, but I know that there was one particular thing that sort of changed it for you, but I need you to share that with everyone else.
Okay. So yeah, you're right. I did try a lot of things. I tried to have a three drink limit. I tried to, what else did I try? I tried everything, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Absolutely everything. And not, there wasn't one point where I sort of came to my senses and thought to myself, actually, maybe I should just stop drinking alcohol. I was trying to make it fit into my life at a time where there's no way it could have fitted into my life. I didn't have the mental faculty. I didn't have the mental maturity to be able to handle something as dangerous as alcohol at that particular time. The one thing that I really, really found helpful and what actually brought me through was, firstly, one-to-one counseling. I had a lovely counselor who really sort of helped me unpack everything outside of the drinking, which helped me sort of lay a bit of a foundation for myself. So funnily enough, when I went to see a counselor about alcohol addiction, we talked about everything other than alcohol.
Okay.
And,
well, yeah, you know, because the problem is with all the other things, I guess, like what we were saying before.
Correct. And then for the drinking part, I mean, I'm quite analytical. I like to, you know, understand the way things work. You know, I have the heart of an engineer. Not that I'm an engineer or anything, but I could have been one.
There's a lot of things that you could do.
Yeah, I know. So I actually wanted to sort of understand the character of alcohol. I wanted to understand what it was doing to me and why it was such a force in my life, and sort of, you know, understand the character of it and tackle it that way. Like, why am I doing this? Was my question. And I found a lot of places were like, well, you're powerless to it, it's a disease, blah, blah, blah. I didn't buy into any of that. And some people will, and, you know, apologies for calling it blah, blah, blah. If it works for you, then please wholeheartedly carry on. I had some experiences with that kind of therapy that were not particularly positive, hence my flippancy about it. But if it works for you, please do continue. I needed to understand why it was, what it was doing to me. I needed to understand how it worked. I needed to understand what it does to my body and what it does to my brain. And I found the Alan Carr Easy Way method. And not Alan Carr, the chatty man, which is what you said when I first told you about it. You were like, yeah. What? The guy from TV, chatty man.
Yeah, I was like, what?
He's a counsellor, what?
Yeah.
That would be an interesting counselling session. So the Alan Carr Easy Way. So, I mean, he's got this method of walking you through sort of, you know, things that have taken over your life. So whether it's food, whether it's smoking, whether it's drinking. And he has this method where you basically read the book, you drink throughout the course of reading the book, and by the end, you don't want to drink anymore. And it sounds ridiculous, and it sounds mad, and it sounds like it's not going to work. But he kind of helped break down a lot of the excuses that I would make for continuing to drink. So remember I said I was trying to make alcohol fit into my life at a yes. time where it would not fit. So yes. He basically goes through every single perceivable excuse that a human makes to drink. So I drink to relax, I drink to do this, I drink to be social, blah, 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 blah. All those stupid excuses that we make for why we do it, especially when we know it's a problem. And he kind of just broke them all down one by one and made me feel really silly about having ever tried to use any of those excuses because they're nonsense. And that really worked for me. And the penny dropped and I got out of one of the darkest periods of my life. Just being able to understand what I was dealing with. And then to take full personal responsibility, to stop blaming people, to stop blaming society, to stop blaming my struggles, and actually just say, you know what, just effing stop it. Count your blessings every single morning and realize that what you think you need to do to self-medicate and make yourself feel better is not making you better.
Yeah.
It's making it worse.
Yeah.
It is that simple.
So basically taking ownership and not, yeah, and basically not blaming it on all of these pressures, these expectations, and just essentially saying it's you that's doing this to yourself, not all of those other things.
Exactly that, yeah. So remember at the very beginning of this, I said, you know, humans have this ability to wander through parts of their life struggling. And then the struggle goes on for so long, it's so prolonged that it becomes completely normal. The key is to be able to actually gain clarity on what your situation is. It's not until you realize that you're struggling for that prolonged period that you can actually deal with it. So the idea is to sort of, you know, just be kind to yourself the way you would treat a family member or a friend.
That's not easy, though. It's not easy, though. I mean, you're around us so much, myself and my sisters, and we talk about ourselves not in the nicest way at all.
It does my head in.
Yeah, I know.
But But the point is, I mean, look, let's put it this way. Did you know, and I don't know the actual, I don't know the stats behind this, but in terms of prescriptions that are prescribed by doctors, veterinary prescriptions, the course of medication that a vet will give to your cat or your dog, that course of medication is more often completed than a doctor giving you a prescription saying you need to take this medication to feel better over this amount of time. We take better care of our cats and dogs than we do of ourselves.
Yeah, it's so true. The
number of unfulfilled prescriptions versus pet prescriptions is absolutely ridiculous. And I forget the number, but I mean, and that's a really small thing. But at the same time, it's quite indicative of how much we don't look after ourselves.
No.
And we do need to be kind to ourselves. But when I say kind, you know, it's important to note that I don't mean fill your Instagram feed with positive, you know, Barnum statements that don't mean anything in the grand scheme. But at the same time, nor do you need to berate yourself.
Yes.
Because that's just as bad. I simply mean love yourself well and be as tough as you need to be to surface honesty. Because the honesty part is the bit that's going to get you through.
That's so true. And, you know, there's like all of these... there's all of these sort of support systems for people that binge drink or have an addiction or just in general having problems with alcohol. And do you think there's enough support out there for the South Asian community specifically? And do you think it's necessary that we have our own sort of support network?
So I know that Alcoholics Anonymous have, I think in the Midlands, they've opened the first sort of fully Punjabi speaking sessions. But again, with the differentiation I make between dependency, like chemical dependency versus binge drinking, I think everybody runs to support those who are dependent on a daily basis. And I don't think there's enough support out there, but it seems to be the easier cause to fix or be perceived to be fixing. I'd say in terms of binge drinking, it's very misunderstood. I see a lot of it. I mean, given my profession, having been a DJ for 20 years, I see, oh my God, I've done something for 20 years. That's scary.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if you wanted to include that bit.
Showing my age.
Yeah.
I started very, very young.
Yeah.
When I was 9.
That makes it better, doesn't it?
So I think there's a lot of support out there for dependency. I don't think there's enough out there for binge drinking, nor is there very much understanding of binge drinking because there's no clear behaviors, right? Because you could be a binge drinker and you only, you know, get smashed every 3 months, but that doesn't mean you're not trying to self-medicate. It could potentially mean that that person is just bubbling for 3 months and then that volcano goes off.
Yes.
It erupts.
Yes.
So I think there needs to be a lot more understanding about it, about binge drinking in general. But like I said before, I don't think there's anything particularly community oriented about this other than the encouragement and the stigma and the need. And from a male perspective, at least the need to be a male.
Yeah. You just said the word encouragement and that just made me think that, there is. It's crazy because I feel like there's a hidden problem, or it's a problem that nobody sort of wants to address, but will still encourage drinking. And it's at the forefront of everything, you know, and people are almost judged for not being drinkers or not being able to drink a lot. I know that when I've gone on a date in the past and I said, oh, I don't really drink that much. And the guy was like, he was like, what? You're Punjabi, you should be able to drink. And I just thought, what? Like, what does that mean? I'm meant to get smashed now? Or like, it's almost like an expectation as well, because you're Punjabi, you should be a drinker, or you're meant to drink a lot, and it is also encouraged. It's weird messaging.
I think there's a subliminal, in some cases, there's a subliminal feeling of not being wanting to be the only drinker. It's a bit like how smoking has changed, right?
Yeah.
How I'd say, you know, smoking areas are probably a little less full than they used to be. And whereas before it would be okay for somebody to get up and say, all right, I'm just going for a fag. And then two or three people from that same table would follow. If you're the only person getting up to go for a cigarette, the amount that the perception of smoking has changed generally in society means that it will feel very, very weird.
Yeah, and it will feel lonely. And I guess it's that same feeling with drinking as well. You don't want to be the only one drinking.
Correct. And yeah. And I'll give you an example of when people have found it really weird when I said that I don't drink. And in full transparency, I have a beer or two now, but this is many, many, many years later, and my mind is right. And I abstained for a really, really long time, and you know, I've gotten a lot more comfortable with myself in recent years, but for that near enough decade, it was very much a case of people just not understanding that I don't drink. I didn't identify as a drinker. I'll give you an example. Renu was standing right next to me. We were at a wedding at the bar. I met a really good friend of mine who I would have previously gotten completely smashed with. And I said, I'm not drinking. I said, I don't drink. And his response was, what? You mean tonight? Are you driving? Let her drive. No, I don't drink. What? Are you like on medication? No, I don't drink. And this guy couldn't get his head around it. He couldn't get his head around it. He's like, well, just why don't you just have one? No, I don't drink. I'm telling you, I don't. Nor do I want to. And you know, short of the situation getting really awkward, I change the subject. But like, you know, that wasn't the first time, and it wasn't the last time that I had to have a really weird, awkward conversation like that. Because the idea of just abstaining completely from something that you have done that is a habit is weird to people. They don't get it, and it might not be a problem for them, so therefore they don't have the same perspective as you.
It's so true. And you know, if you weren't in like a better place in your mind, if you weren't strong enough, you could have, if this was someone else that was, yeah, not as confident in their decision, or they were, yeah, they weren't fully there yet mentally, someone questioning you like that could really throw you off, and you just think, yeah, okay, it's just one. All right, I'll just have one. And it could just progressively get worse. And then you're back to where you started. And it's quite scary and dangerous that people, just through these small little questions, it has so much pressure. I know that, I mean, I've never had an issue with alcohol, but I go through long periods of time of not drinking. Like I can not drink for a whole year, and then there'll be an occasion I feel like, oh, okay, I'll drink tonight. But when I'm going through that phase of like, I just don't really feel like drinking, I don't feel like I need it, or it's a night where I feel like I just don't want to, so many people like react like, why not? Like, oh, like as if you're not going to have fun, as if you're the most boring person in the room, even though I'd be the most energetic, so fun that you'd think I was damn drunk. But like, yeah, people just look at you like you're weird, or like sometimes with me, if I'm in a room full of white people, they'll might assume that I'm Muslim all of a sudden, or it's something cultural. And it's like, no, it's just a choice. Like, what?
Yeah, it can be quite an awkward thing to say no to something that is the norm.
Yeah, and it's daunting for someone that is actually going through something.
Yep. Completely agree.
It would almost make you sort of not want to go anywhere and not want to socialize.
Well, that was my world for a long time, where I would have anxiety about being anywhere where alcohol may be.
And it's everywhere.
And it is everywhere. But at the same time, you know, I know now that it was personal responsibility and it was choice. But at the time, you don't think you have a choice. You really, really don't, right? Because you're made to feel, and I hate to say made to feel, because I don't think anybody is doing it, you know, out of malice or to make you feel a certain way. But you know, there is definitely a sense of belittlement that comes from saying no. And saying, no, I don't want to get involved in what you're doing. I know you're a group of people and I want to be part of your group, but I don't want to do what you're doing because it's not good. It's not good for me. And without going into those details, because I mean, you can't go around going into the details of why you don't drink.
Well, yeah, you can't.
What I think we do need to do more so, on a group level, is if somebody says no, then just leave it at that. You don't need to know why they're not drinking, or you don't need to know, you know, what the situation is around it. Just call it a day. Just leave it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like let people make their choices and that's it. If someone said, oh, I'm not going to eat dessert today, you wouldn't say why not. You would just let them eat whatever they want or not eat whatever they want, right?
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, you know, we have so many stupid superstitions in our community. I don't eat meat on Tuesdays. Well, nobody says, why don't you eat meat on Tuesday? If you say I don't eat meat on Tuesday to another Indian person, they'll be like, oh, okay, that's fair. And it's meaningless, right? Because
no offense to anyone, by the way, but by the way, no, because I have to put this disclaimer out there because you, basically, this is a my jija. He doesn't believe in superstitions. Okay, he doesn't even believe in nazar.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah, and just so. No offense to you. These are his own personal beliefs. And you almost got me. Pull me down with you in that one.
Well, I mean, you know, the example stands though, right?
Yeah.
Because if you have a principle in your life, whether I think it's nonsense or not, if you have a principle, whether it be I don't eat meat on a certain day or yeah. I don't drink, the principle remains the same.
Yeah.
And doesn't need to be questioned by anybody. It's not weird. It shouldn't be perceived as weird. And I think most people that make you feel uncomfortable probably feel more uncomfortable about you not drinking because of their potential dependency on needing it to be social. I think there's a bit of that in there. I wouldn't say that's a total statement that sort of explains it all, but I think there's a lot of that in there.
Yeah. If someone close to you had a similar problem, and knowing what you know now, because there's a lot that you know now, how would you go about helping them? Because like I said before, like telling someone to just stop isn't enough. So what would your best advice be for anyone that is struggling?
So there have been cases where those that know what I've been through have come to me asking for sort of support and help. And I kind of found that the best way to help anybody is to give them the tools to help themselves. Give them the time and give them your patience and give them your deep listening ear and actually listen to what they're saying. And more often than not, it is not about the alcohol. There's usually, and again, it's so complicated that there's no one way to approach it. But I mean, I found writing really helpful, and I've advised other people to journal and to write and to sort of get things off of their chests and, you know, be completely honest with themselves about not only the alcohol part of it, but the other things in their life that are potentially the cause of this effect. So writing and journaling is one side of it. Seeking professional help from counselors and therapists is absolutely required. You need to have that third party perspective where the judgment doesn't exist. And I would say that judgment-free approach is probably something I would advise before actually doing anything else with a person from a personal perspective, because they need to know that they can, there are safe places for them to open up and say what they need to say without that judgment. So I think looking outside of your inner circle is probably quite helpful for professional help. But, you know, never blind yourself. I didn't say your name. Never blind yourself to those who care.
Yeah.
and offer you support. Support comes in so many ways, shapes and forms. And, you know, it's worth learning to see how it's being given to you. So observe, spend a lot of time observing, you know, yourself, your own behaviors.
Get analytical.
Yeah, I mean, it just helped me. It helped me understand what was happening. It helped me understand understanding the moving parts helped me work through this. And that approach has helped one or two people that I've spoken to over the years about a similar problem.
That That's great advice. Thanks, Jeej. And I've got one last question for you, and then we're going to play a game. You know the game. Okay, so what message would you send to the talking aunties or family members that are putting pressure on young girls and guys that are just trying to live their best lives?
Let them live their best lives. Stop getting involved. You don't need to be involved in every aspect of everybody's life.
Mind your business.
Mind your business. Yeah. But at the same time, spend your time observing and analyzing the behaviors of the people that you're there to support. You know, you don't, you know, people will come to you for a solution when they need a solution. And then there'll be other times where you need to step in when you think a solution needs to be found. And the only way you're going to do that is by shutting up and listening. Because if you talk first, you carry the narrative. And actually, it's that person's narrative, not yours. So listen.
It's so true. And you know, these aunties that are so involved and they spend this time being involved, but in the most negative ways, if they were involved and you know, they were watching you but wanted to make a positive impact, they really could because of how involved they get themselves.
Yeah, I mean, we're an analytical bunch, right? But like I said before, if you had a room full of 100 Punjabi people, they would all be able to have a massive discussion about the community's failings. Where it starts is, you know, the individual responsibility of helping alleviate these issues. What are you actually doing to help those to help solve those issues? It's not, oh, poor her, poor him. They have an issue, and then leaving it at that. If you have the capacity to say poor her, poor him, you also have the capacity to go and actually help that person and listen to them.
Yes. Yeah, and just offer some support. Offer a listening ear at the very least. I'm going to play the quickfire association game with you now. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Number one, aunties.
Gossip.
Bofi.
Pere.
Weddings.
Fun.
Swear word.
Shit.
Money.
Comes and goes.
Makeup.
Anchil.
Ah. Family.
Love.
Chai.
Green.
Dogs.
Lolo.
Ah, coronavirus.
Real.
Yay! Could you let everyone know where they could find you for your amazing DJ talents?
So yeah, if you want to listen to some good music, you can find me on Instagram at dipsdanjal. That's DIPZDANJAL. And same again on SoundCloud. I used to drop mixtapes really regularly, less so these days, but yeah, feel free to listen in.
It's okay. You're busy killing life and raising two cute babies, so it's all good. It is all good. But thank you so much for being on my podcast, Jeej.
Thank you for having me.
That brings us to the end of what I felt was a really important discussion and something that needs to be addressed way more. Once again, I want to say a huge thank you to my brother-in-law who basically took over the podcast today, sharing his personal experience and so much of his wisdom. You can see why I think he's so amazing now, right? We actually have many great discussions and I'm really glad I got to share such an important one with you all. I'd also like to take this time to say if you or someone that you love is struggling with alcohol, please do seek the help, even if it is just talking to someone close to you. I really hope you found today's episode helpful and valuable. And if you're listening on the Entel app, there will be direct links to everything we spoke about in today's episode. Before I go, please subscribe to the podcast, rate and review. It does really, really help me out. Thank you so much for listening, and I can't wait for you to join me on the next one.